So it's the end. It's the end of another quarter, and as we do sometimes on this podcast, I have a party at my place in which I invite people from Antioch to come over, and Umberto, and we have a podcast party. So it is that time of year, and it is that podcast party. So welcome to the Psychology in Seattle podcast, everybody. I am your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I am chair of the Couple and Family Therapy Program, and I'm also a licensed therapist.
My name is Umberto Castañeda. I market root beers like Dr. Pepper, mostly.
Today, we're going to do tougher bluffs and random trivia questions with our audience. I'm going to have Umberto challenge different audience members, willing audience, consensual challenges, if you will, and we'll see who we'll keep tally on how good Berto does against the crowd. What do you say?
Oh, what? Okay, I didn't know about that part. Okay. All right.
So choose a challenge audience member consensually. Well, that's now you're just pointing randomly.
Consensually?
Yeah.
Oh.
So go up to somebody.
Okay,
Sarah. You and Sarah? Okay, so here's the question. It's tough or bluff. Teen girls experience a 15% decrease in peer acceptance for having sex. So teen girls experience a 15% decrease in peer acceptance after having sex. What do you think? Tough or bluff, Berto?
All right, I'm going to go with tough. And that's because I think that there's a lot of peer pressure in high school. I think a lot of guys are talking about like, oh, have you gotten laid yet or whatever. I think maybe for females it's a little different. Like you know, don't give it up so easily. Maybe that's because that's how it was when I was in high school. It was like in the 50s or something. But
okay,
that's mine.
So what does Sarah say?
Tough.
I think it depends on the age, like the specific age of the teenager. But generally, I would say a bluff.
Okay, good. It is bluff. You are right, Sarah.
Woo!
It is a 45% decrease in peer acceptance, not just 15%.
Whoa.
So after girls have sex, they experience a 45% decrease in peer acceptance.
So I was wrong for the right reasons?
I guess so. Oh. All right, challenge another person. Or do you have a question? Anita has a question.
So my question is, when we're talking about peers, are those peers only girls or are they also boys?
Also boys.
Okay, interesting.
But probably a lot of girls, right? All right. So choose another.
Slut shaming.
Choose another. Right. Yeah. Slut shaming is alive and well in American society. Choose another challenge consensual partner. May.
You accept. Okay.
Student May accepts your challenge.
They only get harder.
All right. Tougher bluff. Teen boys experience a 88% increase in peer acceptance after having sex. Teen boys experience a 88% increase in peer acceptance for having sex. What do you think, Berto?
I'm going to go bluff. I mean, I would say they probably increase acceptance, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think it's that high. In fact, I think that it would probably be under 50, like 40.
Okay. So, challenger May?
I'm going bluff.
I'm going to say tough. The 88% does seem a bit high to me, and it's kind of a random number. But I'm still going to say tough.
Student May is correct. She's a smart cookie. It is tough. 88% increase in peer acceptance for having sex. What is wrong with our society, Berto?
That can't be. I didn't have sex till I was 18 and no one accepted me. Oh, wait.
All right. Tougher bluff, you guys. Teen girls experience a 25% decrease in peer acceptance for making out, quote unquote. And that's the researcher's term, making out. So teen girls experience a 25% decrease in peer acceptance for making out.
That feels high for just making. I mean, making out like big making out?
Like necking, like
intercourse making.
Like heavy petting from the neck up.
Doggy style making out? Okay. No, if it's just like heavy petting and necking. Okay, the hickey thing might put it over the top. I would have gone with like 15%. So I'm going to go bluff.
And I'm going to have to agree. It is a bluff. I mean, totally. 25%. That's...
For just kissing?
Yeah. Hey, stocks are up. So 25% it is. Bluff.
Well, it's bluff, but for the wrong reason. It's a 25% increase, which is interesting. So when teen girls have sex, they have a decrease in peer acceptance. But when they make out, they have an increase in peer acceptance.
Well, we were in the right direction. We were heading down. It would have looped back around.
Tougher bluff, you guys. Teen boys experience a 29% increase in peer acceptance for making out. So teen boys, do they experience a 29% increase in peer acceptance for making out, quote unquote?
I'm going to go bluff. No, I hear you over there pointing up, and I kind of believe it, but I'm going to go controversial here. Hey, Tommy, what's up, man? Guess what? I made out with this girl last night. You made out? What do you mean? You had sex? No, I made out. Dude, you suck. if you had had sex, I would have liked it. So I'm going to go bluff. They get all sorts of peer pressure to have done more.
All right. What do you say, Yodani?
I'm going to agree with you on that
one.
Well, you guys are right. It's bluff. It's a 29% decrease in peer acceptance for making out. And the speculation is exactly what you're saying.
You guys thought I was crazy? You thought I was crazy. Okay.
Yeah. Is that for girls, if they make out and not have sex, they have an increase in peer acceptance because we want girls to mix it up, but not too much. And for boys, you want them to go all the way. And if they don't get to go all the way, then they get judged by their peers as being lame in some way. All right. Choose another challenger, Britta.
All right. Oh, come on.
Borderline consensual.
Okay.
I have the option to say no.
You have the option to say no.
All right. Tough or bluff?
I put this thing in front of your face. You can say yes or no. Yeah.
God. That's it. In Nicaragua and Tanzania, women who own property are more likely to experience interpersonal violence.
In Nicaragua and Tanzania,
which are in totally different parts of the world, as far as I understand. Can you say Nicaragua the proper way?
Nicaragua. Nicaragua.
Okay, Nicaragua and Tanzania.
Women
who own property are more likely to experience interpersonal violence or domestic violence.
Okay, so you're saying Nicaragua, Tanzania, women that own property experience more badness.
Yeah.
I'm going to go bluff. The ownership of property, sad as it is, makes it so that people are like, well, she's more like a man or something. And so I'm not going to be as abusive. That's my stance. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that that might be what happens.
I love that rationale. It's such bullshit. So I'm actually going to say bluff. No, I'm going to say tough. Like, I'm going to say tough. And it's because I believe that in areas that are inherently sort of against women's rights, if you increase women's rights, it actually creates more violence against women.
I have it written down as bluff, but my head says bluff, but my heart says tough, if
sure.
You know what I'm saying.
Sure.
Choose another challenger. Consensual challenger, Mitzi.
All right.
So states with the most registered sex offenders per capita, there are two states that really stick out as having the most sex offenders per capita.
Louisiana.
Okay, Mitzi guesses Louisiana.
And Tennessee.
Okay, we have someone who really hates the South, apparently.
States? I don't know the states. Alabama? Is that a state?
Another person who hates the South?
No, I'm just picking states that I know. Texas? I don't know.
Okay, you both are... I mean, it's a hard question, but it's Oregon. Oregon.
What?
And Delaware.
Ah! East Coast, West Coast...
Okay, now guess how many sex offenders per 1,000 people. What do you think, Berto?
Where? In the U.S.?
In Oregon and Delaware.
Oh, in those places.
Yeah.
14.
14.
Jesus. Wait, 14 per 1,000? Oh, okay. Well, if it's the most in the country, I'm going to go 20.
Mitzi's more right. It's 7 per 1,000 people.
Yeah, that's better.
It's better than 20.
There's an app on your phone that I actually downloaded once to see the sex offenders that live in your neighborhood.
Oh. What if you download it and you load it up and it's a picture of you? And it's staring back at you. You're like, what?
That'd be a good movie.
And then you remember all these things you didn't remember before. That's right. Yeah. And then it's like, it says what you did and you're like, what?
Yeah. The guy kills him. He like, you know, does a whole episode long like, oh, I don't know. And then he kills himself. And then the camera zooms in on the cell phone, and it's his twin brother. Oh! All right, choose a challenger, Britta.
M. Night Shyamalan over here. All right, okay, you're up again.
Sarah, all right. In general, what is the maximum amount of the following drugs can stay in your urine in terms of days? So I'm going to give you some drugs. How many days is the maximum amount in general that the drug will stay in your urine as being testable. Does that make sense, Berto?
Yes, it makes
sense. Okay, so how many days cocaine?
Cocaine, how many days it will stay in your system? 10 days.
Okay, and what does Sarah say?
3 days.
She's closer, 4 days.
Oh, okay.
Pot, what's the maximum in general? In
2 days.
2 days.
1 month.
One month is correct.
What?
Alcohol.
I just took a drug test today, damn it. Oh,
alcohol.
Wait, it's legal. I don't care.
Alcohol.
Alcohol, 48 hours. 2 days.
2 days.
1 week.
Closer, 5 days.
What?
MDMA, Molly, ecstasy.
Molly, a week.
Okay.
7 days.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Wrong. 4 days.
Oh, okay. So I was close.
Benzodiazepines like Xanax, that kind of thing.
Prescription Xanax?
Yep.
3 days.
3 days.
Same.
Wrong. 42 days.
42 days?
Well, there's a range, and I'm giving you the higher end of the typical range.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, all right. Choose another challenger, Brito. I think you got smacked by Sarah.
I think so, but that's because she does drugs a lot. All right. Let's go again here.
All right, Zach. Tough or bluff. Older adults think more about the future than younger adults. Actually, pick Mitzi. She's a perfect person. She likes older adults. People.
Sorry. You got... Wait, why are we doing this?
Because Mitzi is a therapist who is specializing in older adults.
Okay, so we're going to someone who knows what they're talking about.
All right, tough or bluff. Okay. Tough or bluff. Older adults think more about the future than young adults do. Tough or bluff.
About the future?
Older adults.
Oh, yeah.
Older
totally
adults
tough.
Think more about
totally
the future
tough.
Than younger
tough.
Adults do.
It's bluff.
No. I mean, come on now. You early adults are like, dude, what are we doing this Sunday? Today it's Saturday or Sunday morning. And it's like, well, we should play some hoops. Okay. And then later, it's like, dude, what am I going to do in 20 years if I live that long? You know, that's how it goes. So I'm going tough.
It's tough. Over the course of 19 days, researchers placed daily phone calls to more than 100 older and younger adults, asking participants to indicate what they were thinking about and whether it was about the past, the present, or the future. They found that older adults thought about the future more often than younger adults. So it goes against the common wisdom that older adults live in the past, is what they were trying to dispel, that notion that older adults live in the past.
Okay, see, I would go bluff on that, though, because I'd say, like, it's not either or. It's like, I care about 20 years from now because I'm thinking about all the 20 years that just went by that I didn't do shit in, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, God damn it. 20 years went by.
Consensual. Anita, what grade in high school do girls think most about suicide? What grade, 9 through 12, 9, 11, 9, 10, 11, 12, what grade do girls think most about suicide, Berto? What do you think?
See, I would have gone 7th grade, but okay, 9th grade.
Okay,
I'm going 9th grade because, well, it's a transition point. They have just gone from that, like, middle school thing to, like, high school, and their bodies have changed a lot, and everything around them's changing. They're maturing faster than boys. They can't handle the truth. Their parents are divorcing, and it's a whole new curriculum. So, you know.
Okay.
Well, I part of me wants to agree with Berto because it makes sense, but the other
you're conflicted.
But the other part of me just wants to tell Berto that he's wrong. So I'm going to say sophomore year.
Okay, you should have gone with your pro Berto stance because he was right. 9th grade. Now another question: what percentage of 9th graders in America? How many of them reported having contemplated suicide in the last year?
That's depressing, man.
Among 9th grade girls.
Percentages is where
percentage.
We're talking. Okay, I'm gonna be really optimistic, and I'm gonna say 1%.
Okay, so does it specify suicidal ideation or
having reported contemplated sex in the last year?
Suicide. Oh, Freudian. La petite mort, calling for Dr. Honda.
Okay, so with a serious question, I'm going to say 15%?
That's closer, 25%.
Oh my gutting.
Reasons why 9th graders contemplate suicide or sex? Because a lot of people contemplate suicide because when we are stressed out as humans, we tend to turn to that as a way to end our misery.
I think it has a lot to do with poorly developed coping mechanisms. Their brains aren't really developed at that point to be able to handle quite that transition that society has set up, like 9th grade transition to be. And they just don't have the capacity for other options.
Yeah. It's a very difficult time for people. A vast majority of my teenage clients are around that age. 8th, 9th grade is this. Yeah, it's like the 13, 14-year-old years are the most likely to end up in my office.
My experience with this is that I had been depressed pretty much my whole life, but I didn't ever think about suicide until I was about 16 or 17 years old. And the only reason I did start thinking about it was because a friend of mine committed suicide. And so I know that a lot of people worry about having somebody in your life committing suicide, making that, that puts the thought into other people's minds. I know that that's been a conversation. But when I was a freshman and a sophomore, it didn't occur to me that I could escape this pain through suicide. But it was only after my friend did that I thought, oh, I didn't even know that was an option. So I think that's why I was like, it can't be that high, because how many kids at that age have experienced someone committing suicide? So,
all right, wow. Same study. Boys, what grade do boys contemplate most suicide in high school? So 9, 10, 11, 12.
New challenger?
No, same.
Oh, same challenge. Oh, well, you're getting...
I'm going to say, I'm going to pull this out of the air because I know nothing about teenage boys yet. Well, let's say I knew a lot about teenage boys when I was a teenage girl, but as a therapist, I know nothing about teenage boys yet.
Good.
Junior year?
Okay. Junior year, 11th grade. What do you think, Berto?
Yes. I'm going to go... Is that a tough... Or, oh, no, this is not tough. I'm going to go tough with you. Like, that's 11th because... 9th grade, whatever. You're like, oh, cool. I get to drive my mom's car sometimes. And then 10th grade, you're like, oh, these are some interesting classes. And I hear about this stuff that I could be doing, athletics, blah, blah. But then 11th grade, you're like, you got to take tests, man. You got to start picking a career. Next year, it's over, man. And so then you're like, stress. I failed the SATs.
The girl to homecoming, and she says no.
Well, that's right. You start like asking, and you're like, so then it's definitely 11th grade.
And then your mom is like, stop making me wash all your socks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, that's right. And then by 12th grade, you're high on pot and you're graduating. You don't care. You already flunked out of every college admission. So it's definitely 11th.
All right. You guys are right. 11th grade. Very smart.
Woo! Hey, high five.
Nice.
What percentage do you think?
25% for girls.
Have reported contemplating
10%. 10%.
10%.
I'm going to go with 15%.
It's 22%.
Oh, my.
So very close to girls, 22 as opposed to 25. So, you know, pretty similar number.
So is this because their girlfriends contemplated / committed suicide 2 years earlier? Is that why? They're depressed now and they're like, oh.
So, Berto, didn't you have a story you wanted to share with us today?
I did. Did I? Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Oh, great panel for this story. It's like, have you guys been to spa treatments?
Yes.
I was very... anti-spa treatments a few years ago. This sounds like a comedy routine. Like anyone from out of town here? No. I was very anti-spa treatments a few years ago because, I don't know, it just felt like a foofy thing that you do or something. I had no interest. I stayed at this one hotel downtown, and it was a New Year's kind of thing. You know, we party, stay there. And the next morning, everyone was getting like facials or spa treatments or things. So it was like the thing everyone was doing. So I'm like, all right, I guess I'll do one of these things. And I got one, and this was like maybe 10 years ago or something. And it was amazing. I don't know. It was like a facial or something. It wasn't even like the best thing. It was just, but I had never had anything like that happen to me. And it was like heaven, man. I was sitting there. They're rubbing stuff on me. They're like pampering me. They're pouring water. I mean, it's just crazy, right? So I changed my mind, and I started going frequently. I got kind of addicted to the stuff. It's not cheap, let me tell you. So I went for a while. All right. Fast forward to my birthday this year. I hadn't been back for 7 years. I hadn't done any spa treatments. For my birthday, I was like, you know what? I'm going to get a spa treatment. I deserve it, you know? It's been 7 years. So I went and got a spa treatment, and I remember how much I liked it, so I started kind of going. But recently, there was a friend of mine was having like a party. It was like a bachelor party thing. And then for one of the things in the bachelor party, we went to a spa. And it was a spa here in Seattle. And I just thought, okay, I love spa treatments now. Let's go do it. When we signed up, they didn't ask us questions about what kind of therapist you wanted or what kind of treatment you wanted. We just signed up for the thing. Went there. And it's one of those Russian spas where it's got like the sauna and the steam room and all these kind of things. No. It's not what you think. It's not what you think. It's just that I got a hand job. No, just kidding. That's not it. Me and a buddy, we're sitting there waiting for our therapists. And okay, I can admit, we both looked on the wall and we looked at the little pictures of the different therapists. And we were saying, oh, who do you hope is your therapist? And my buddy said, oh, I hope it's that gal here. And I said, oh, I hope it's this gal. And as we're waiting, the gal he was hoping for actually comes out and says, Mr. Such and Such, you ready for your treatment? And so as he starts walking by, this guy comes out and says, hey, Mr. Umberto, are you ready for your treatment? And I'm like, yes, sir. And my buddy looks back and just kind of smiles at me. So I go ahead, and I had never had a spa treatment from a male. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that I'm straight, so I always kind of prefer the touch of a lady. So this was kind of a new experience for me. And it was a very different experience because it was a salt scrub thing, rub, where they then wrap you in a plastic thing. And there was a lot of touching involved, a lot. And then, like, you get on this little table, and they tell you, okay, you see this little thing that looks like a napkin has been reduced microscopically in size? Put that on top of your naked body. And you're like, what napkin? I don't see anything. And then, you know, he comes in, and he's very good at his job. It's just that it was like invasive surgery. I'm talking about, like the rubbing and the massaging was, like really intense and close to the no-fly zones and things like that. And so, I don't know. It was kind of like it changed my perspective on the whole spa treatment thing. I was very conflicted. You know, I went through like, because when you have your eyes closed, hands are on you. Some, you know, part of you is like, I don't know, I'm just being touched by hands. And so I was having these feelings of like, I kind of feel like sexually turned on, but I know that I shouldn't. And this is so touchy. And it was very, very, so then I talked about it with my buddies. And of course they made endless fun of me, but, that was my recent story.
But then you went back and
I went back to the same place.
And
I wanted
you got
to
a salt scrub.
Listen, I'm a scientist, right? So I went back to do an experiment to see, this time I requested a female practitioner and I wanted to compare and contrast. And I got a different kind of treatment. This one is a thing where they put you on a bed, they put salt, but then eventually they wash it off with water. But this is the part that blew my mind. She comes out, says, get on the table, lie face down first. And here's the towel. This little towel is optional, she says to me. And I'm like, what do you mean, optional? So I went ahead, I lied down, I put the towel on because I'm like, it's not optional. I obviously misheard. She comes out, she says, and they start with this like honey treatment. It's like super sticky and awkward. Pretty soon her hands are getting stuck on the towel. So then I'm like, oh, okay, fine. Like, forget the towel. And so like, we took the towel off. So the rest of the treatment, including when I turn over, there was no freaking towel. Like, this is perfectly legal. It's a thing. So it's like, context is everything, I guess. Like, now there was no happy ending. I know that's where you're all waiting for. There's no happy ending, but it's still fascinating to me. It's like a nude beach. It's like when you go to the beach and people are wearing bikinis, but you go and see someone in their underwear and it's tragic, right? Context is everything. I'm here getting a professional spa treatment at a very high, establishment, blah, blah, blah. Totally legal. But yet what's happening is almost indistinguishable from what could be happening a few miles down the road.
So right now, right now she's at a party going, I told him it was optional and he just flung it aside. And I was like, subjected to a vision that I cannot get out of my mind.
No, she said, I clearly said, it's not optional. And as I was running out from the room and he was holding me, no, that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
No, anyways, it was a shocking experience, one which I will not soon forget. And I wanted to share it with just you people here.
Yeah. So while you're laying there, you're just thinking, she's staring at my junk. She's staring at my junk.
Actually, I gotta be honest. It did it. It's so funny. The one with the dude felt way more sexual. That said, he was completely professional. And in no way do I feel he crossed what he thinks are professional boundaries. But I do think that was a way more sexual experience for me. In my head, I was like in a rage of like feelings and things and thoughts. And the other one, I was actually quite relaxed and I felt very comfortable.
Two things I got here. One, maybe you felt super sensitive about the treatment with the male because it was like an elephant in the room. You're like, okay, there's an elephant there, but don't think about that elephant. So what are you going to do? You're going to think about that elephant. Secondly, they're licensed, just like a therapist. Okay, Kirk, you can get to the jokes in a second. So they're therapists. They're just like therapists. They're licensed. And like a gynecologist who is also licensed, they look at it all day long. It's just a job.
Is he the elephant or is his junk the elephant? Because it kind of looks like an elephant. You know what I mean? If you look at it like straight on, full frontal, it kind of looks like an elephant.
The elephant in the room did not touch me. He was fine. They are professional. They are licensed. This is what they do for a job day in, day out, every day. So it's not like, ooh, today I get to give a rub to someone. You're absolutely right. Now, being the kind of person I am, part of me is like, yeah, touch away. I don't care, right? But since it was such a different experience, and it's like, but this is at a spa, it like totally threw me for a loop. You know what I mean? Like if this is at a party and some dude's drunk, it's like, I'm going to give you a back rub. And the guy like touches me. Like, whatever, we're at a party. Who cares? But this was a spa treatment at a place that's not reputed to not be what it is.
A blind study.
Ooh. Pepsi Coke challenge. How sexually turned on are you? And then
right.
Reveal.
The blood flow meter thing.
The plethysmograph. Plethysmograph.
I don't know what that is, but yes.
It's the thing that goes around your penis to measure how engorged you are.
That's true. That's true.
Pecker checker. Choose another challenger.
All right. Mitzi is up.
In 2015, what percentage of Americans have a favorable opinion of Kanye?
This is not tough, just a number?
This is a number. What percentage of Americans have a favorable opinion of Kanye?
Oh, I don't know if you might have to edit this out. I really like Kanye. 45%.
45% have a favorable opinion of Kanye.
45% of Americans polled, not just rap fans and things like that?
Yeah, all Americans.
Oh, no, it's like 20%.
It is less than that, 13%.
Because think about it, like hip-hop fans, I love the guy. I think he's great in his music.
Same challenger. What percentage of Americans would consider voting for him in 2020?
That's right.
Because he's going to run for president,
he
right?
Announced.
So percentage of Americans who would consider voting for him, what do you think, Mitzi?
1%.
1%.
5%.
That's close. 6%. 6% of Americans would consider voting for Kanye if he ran for president in 2020. Choose another challenger.
All right. We'll go...
O'Donnie.
Double down over here.
All right. O'Donnie. O'Donnie was a guest on the podcast talking about depression and on another podcast talking about suicide. And it gets a lot of positive responses on YouTube and over email. A lot of people really like that episode, which tells me how little in our country we talk about depression and suicide and how many people are suffering from it or have suffered from it and felt like they didn't ever hear anyone talking about it. So,
that was a great one.
So good for you. All right.
I learned something in that one. Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a moment of realization in that one.
That's right. All right, tougher bluff. Inducing a sense of awe, like in a church service or in an astrophysics lecture.
Orgasm?
Orgasm, if you're in awe of that. Yeah, maybe. So inducing a sense of awe in someone can promote generosity and helpfulness. Tougher bluff, what do you think?
Well... I'm going to go tough because whenever orgasms are induced in me, I end up paying like $100, $150. So I am kidding.
It's very generous and helpful.
I'm kidding. All right, right. Feeling of awe induces generosity. I bet you that's true because I can see that you'll do a fundraiser and then you'll show something that induces feelings of awe or awe, and that will get you the bucks. So I'm going to go tough.
Okay.
I'm going to go tough. I don't have a clever reasoning why. It just seems right.
It's tough. You guys are very smart. The study found that people who experience awe are more likely to give to others and help others, which might explain the way that church services are designed.
I'm going to be giving her my office. My office.
The study is in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. I forget the exact methodology. But I think they expose people to something that typically induces awe and then ask them, how much would you give to this charity or something like that? All right, choose another challenger, Berto.
Do you want to go?
Laura. Okay, this is right up your alley. Right up your alley, Laura. Percentage of people who prefer toilet paper roll to roll under versus over.
Percentage of people who prefer
the toilet paper roll to roll under.
Under?
Versus over.
Versus over. Okay, well, so since over is the right and only way, but most people are kind of weird, I'm going to say like 40% prefer under.
Yeah, I would go 60-42. I think we're going to agree on that one.
Okay, you're going to go 40%?
40% go prefer under.
Well, you guys are close. It's 72%.
What? 72% prefer under?
Yeah.
But that doesn't...
No.
That doesn't make sense. Right. You can't pull it out. It breaks.
There's a lot. Now, this might be a typo. I might have to look this up
later. This is why I stopped using toilet paper.
But either way, there's 30-ish percent that prefer it the way you hate it to be. You know what I mean?
God.
Which is crazy to me, because clearly over is the right way. totally. How many? Who's an under person? May's an under. Ostracize.
You wait, wait. Let me make
you pull less. Is that your justification? You pull less.
All right.
Percentage of Facebook likes. Okay, so we have of the Facebook likes. What percentage of Facebook likes of Trump's Facebook page are women? What percentage of the Facebook likes are women?
Since he is a complete misogynist and has terrible track record with female issues, I'm going to say, sadly, 50%.
I'm going to go less. I'm going to say about 25%.
Berto, you are almost right, 48%.
Wow.
All right, let's move on. Hillary Clinton Facebook likes. What percentage are women of Hillary Clinton?
Well, sadly, since women don't support their women sisters in general, not you. I'm just saying. But it's true. Like, they bring each other down, right? Bring the man down. So I'm going to say that Hillary Clinton has 60% female followers on her thingy.
Okay.
75.
You guys are off. It's 47% of the Facebook likes are women.
How sad that is.
So of the Facebook
likes, it could be because they don't like her.
For Hillary Clinton, a lot of variables.
So I'm a historical feminist, and I actually wrote Hillary Clinton and asked her why she supported very specific things. For example, why is she a neoliberalist? That really bothers me, and that is not a feminist concept. And so as a woman that's running for that, and if she wants feminist backing, she really needs to re-examine this. I also wrote her and asked her why she supports family values, because historically that is not represented as a woman, my interest. And I never heard back from her, but if she doesn't change that, I won't vote for her, sadly.
But you will vote for Trump.
Oh, look at that. No.
All right, choose another challenger, Berto.
All right, who hasn't gone in a while? Have you gone? Oh, no, because you got robbed, man. All right,
this is a multiple question.
Okay.
In 2015, percentage of Americans who are satisfied with the way these groups are treated, so these different ethnic and gender groups. So the percentage of Americans who are satisfied with the way these groups are treated, women, what do you think? Percentage of Americans who are satisfied with the way women are treated?
75%.
75% are satisfied with the way women
satisfied,
are
satisfied, yes. Because okay. It's like 50% is men, and like 25% of women think that they have it fine.
Okay. I'll pull a Price is Right and go 76%.
You chose wrong. It's 64%.
Oh,
64.
So I was closer. You tried to one-up me, you see?
All right, African Americans. What percentage of Americans are satisfied with the way African Americans
like
are treated?
Like 90%.
64% are satisfied with the way women are treated. What about African Americans?
90%.
90% of Americans are satisfied with the way African Americans are treated.
Yeah, and here's why. Like 80% of people, like, well, yeah, there's a lot of Hispanics might disagree. So, okay, I'm going to drop it to 70%, but I'm going to say tons of white folk probably say, like, what? That was 200 years ago. And then, like, a sad portion of black Americans probably think it's their fault. And then the Hispanics are probably like, dude, man, don't ask me questions. I'm trying to, like, cross over here. And
whenever he talks, do you feel yourself kind of clenching a little bit? Just a little bit of sphincter clenching? And like, oh, God, what is he going to say? All right, hand the microphone to Zach.
I'm going to go 49. I think what Berto's saying is there's a lot of truth to it. Like, there's just a lot of naivety. 49.
Holy crap. 49% is the right answer.
Whoa! That's encouraging, even though that's such a big number. But it's encouraging because I said 70. I said 90 to begin with.
Yeah, but let's focus on Zach. He's an incredibly smart guy for choosing it right on. Good job.
Where are you going to go now?
Disneyland.
I'm going to go to Disneyland.
To black Disneyland. Okay. All right, Berto.
Disneyland oppresses people.
As an immigrant yourself, immigrants, what percentage of Americans are satisfied with the way immigrants are treated in the United States?
Actually, ironically, very few, because they all want to shoot them and deport them. So I'm going to go like 30%, but for the wrong reason. Like, I don't know if that counts. Like, I'm just going to die on this hill. I'm going to say, like, 30% of Americans are satisfied. The rest are dissatisfied because they want to kill them. Okay. So, it's okay. Like...
I'm going the other way. I'm going to say 75%.
probably right for that reason.
It's closer to Berto, 44%.
But I'm right for the wrong reason.
Only 44% of Americans are satisfied with the way immigrants are treated in the United States.
But I bet you, I'm sorry, I bet you a lot of times it's like, are you satisfied, sir, are you satisfied with the way immigrants are treated? Hell no, they should stop them at the border and kill them. I tell you, it's got to be
no,
a lot
no,
of
no.
That.
That's not the way that
it's not the way it's worded.
Yeah, okay. They were asking about, right. You know, oppression and
okay,
racism.
Okay, fair enough,
and
fair enough. Okay.
All right.
I mean, come on.
Totally bullshit. The amount of people who should be satisfied with that, all these numbers should be zero. So anything above zero is bullshit.
Can I ask a quick question?
Huh?
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
I guess I just did. No, just kidding. What should Hungary do with the immigrants that are trying to come through their border?
What do you think?
Let them through. Let some of them through. Stop all of them. Those are the options. Let
Tougher
them through.
Stop.
I'm going to go with Hungary needs to let some portion through and work with their neighbors. That's what I'm going to go with. As far as how to stop the other ones, sadly, they might need to put up some fences and do some things because there is the reality of just the physical reality of how many they can house. But the humanitarian in me says, like, let them all through. They can all live here. But there's also practical. So that's my point.
This is a tough one. I really don't have a stance on it. I was just trying to figure out what the whole, like, eminent domain thing meant to people of Hungary, you know? So it's a tough one.
On NPR on the way here, that the president said some sort of statement about how Christians in Hungary don't want Muslims to be in their country and overtake Christianity and ruin the Christian culture.
Well, and another point I heard made was that, because America, I think, is Obama's offering to let in like 10,000 people or something like this, which, by the way, everyone's like, oh my God, you're going to ruin the country, blah, blah, right? But he's offering to let in 10,000. But 10,000 is a very, very small fraction of the total number. And so someone was making the point that it's easy for us to get on our high horse and be like, how come you're not letting everyone in? We're letting 10,000 people in. But they're like, dude, we're talking a million people here or something. So that's kind of hard, too.
All right. Anyways. Another.
So I brought us everyone down.
Yeah, we have three more groups. Now, I don't know if this is the politically correct label, but this is the label they had for in the research, is Arabs. So the amount of Americans who are satisfied with the way Arabs are treated in the United States. What do you think, Berto? Percentage?
Yeah, I'm going to say like 40%.
Okay. Zach?
Yeah, if it's on the same lines as like immigrants and, you know, like the other ethnic groups, I want to say it's 35.
Okay, you guys are close. 49%. So yeah. Close to immigrants. But a lot of people, a majority of Americans, 51%, they are unsatisfied with the way Arabs are treated in the United States, which is actually encouraging, really.
Well, I have a question about that. So other than of the obvious, which is, oh, they just arrested this kid and...
like in Texas.
Yeah. And then clearly, I'm sure that there's parts of this country where if they went, they might get shot and killed, right? Which is terrible. But I am wondering, like, is there a widespread problem right now where they're like, I know a Sikh guy got beat to death or nearly to death the other day because they thought he was Muslim or something, but he's not Muslim. He's Sikh. Yeah. So I'm wondering.
But even if he was Muslim, I mean, why?
No, I get that, right? Yeah. But I'm saying like black people are killing each other because of their socioeconomic reasons and being discriminated against constantly, right? And there's lots of them all the time, right? I don't suffer directly from this every day, but I'm sure there's huge Hispanic problems down south along the similar lines. So I'm just wondering if there is actually a really big issue right now in Islamic communities being oppressed in this country.
Right.
And I don't know.
I think there's a, like Kirk said, the definition of Arab is weird. And so when we're looking at what most Americans think of as Arab, just like you said that the Sikh guy was beaten because they thought he was a Muslim, there is a huge range of people that the average American thinks of as Arab and assumes that they're Muslim.
Actually, I just did it. I just realized because the question was Arab, right? Arab. And I said Sikh and I said Muslim. I changed it to Muslim automatically. Right. So you're right.
Yeah. So they think everybody who wears a turban is Muslim.
Yeah. All right. Next group, Asians, like some of us in this room. So Asians, what percentage of Americans are satisfied with the way my brothers and sisters are treated?
Except for Hollywood, 80%.
That's a good guess.
95.
78%. Very close, Berto. 78% of Americans are satisfied with the way Asians are treated in the United States, which is kind of interesting.
So you had to be in an internment camp for a little bit there during the war.
No big deal. We're satisfied with that.
Yeah.
As an Asian person,
yeah,
with several other Asian people, Asian in air quotes people here, every single one of us is a different kind of Asian.
Yeah.
And our cultures do not really overlap, right, at, almost at all.
Yeah. If you've been in one of my classes, my guess is you've heard me say the label Asian refers to literally half of the population of the planet.
I'm sorry. Okay. Oriental. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. That's her punching him in the face. I was actually on the local Christian TV show. Do you know that it's – have you ever flipped through cable and like landed on the Christian TV show? I was on it recently talking about chemical dependency. Don't ask me why. But at the end, they give a survey to all of their guests to fill out. And they said, you know, how satisfied were you being on our, you know, show, da-da-da. And then they asked some demographic questions, and there were boxes for ethnicity, and one of them was Oriental.
Oh.
And I gleefully checked it because I just thought it was like the funniest thing in my life. Okay, Hispanics. What percentage of Americans are satisfied with Hispanics in this country, Berto? What do you think?
I don't know, like 30%.
30%?
Wait, are satisfied. No, sorry, the other way. 60%.
60%. You were very bad at math, if that was your other...
No, I forgot that it was the negative, not the positive. It was the positive, not the negative. So 60%.
60% of Americans are satisfied with the way Hispanics are treated in the United States.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of thinking a lot of people are like, I don't know, they're fine. I know Carlos down the street. He cuts my, yeah, like, I pay this Mexican kid $2 a day. He, like, mows my lawn, lifts the stones.
So you're saying they're more familiar with Hispanics.
Yeah, and that they think they're fine because they're all cheery. They don't complain. And, you know.
I'm curious if the sample happens to be 49 again, right? Because that was, like, two times. Third time's a charm.
Oh, okay. You're right? trying to go. Berto Schulzer, 58%.
Oh.
58% of Americans. Yeah. So again, to review, women Americans, 64% are satisfied with the way they're treated. African Americans, 49. Immigrants, 44. Arabs, 49. Asians, 78. And Hispanics, 58. I mean, this is actually quite, I don't know, optimistic in my mind, because this means that generally a third to a half of Americans are dissatisfied with the way various different groups are being treated. That's a good sign, in my opinion. Because this is presuming a lot of white people are included in this, in the percentage of people who are dissatisfied with the way other groups are being treated, which is nice.
Are whites now under 50% in the country?
They're close to 50, yeah. If not, 49-ish.
Oh, 49?
49.
All right, another challenger. We have a few more. Alicia. Listener Alicia, master of the long and very good tougher bluff questions. They were very good. Percentage of Americans who report typically having sex on the first date. Berto, what do you think? First date. Percentage of Americans, all Americans, who report typically having sex on the first date. What do you think?
10%.
This is all Americans, young and old.
Yeah. I'm going to go 10%.
All right, 10%.
Because, like, even guys are going to be like, no, second date or whatever. And then most females, even if they do, they'll probably be like, oh, no, never. You know, so I'm 10%.
I'm thinking he's a little bit of a prude, and I'm going to say 30%, 40%. I'm going to say 40.
40% typically have sex on the first date.
I sure hope so.
Breaking stereotypes left and right. any other guesses, actually? I'm curious what other people think.
I'm looking at 60. I listen to 92.5 Moving, right? Just a little plug there. And most of the callers call in asking why that didn't happen. You know what I'm saying? So.
Oh, I'm going to say like 20%.
Oh, 25? I don't know. Sure.
I'm going to say with the advent of like Tinder and Match and all those methods of... I'm going to go 47.
I'm going with 30.
I would say 30 as well.
As I said, 70%.
It is, Berto's closest, it's actually 4%.
Yes! You can all suck it on the first date.
Y'all are slutty.
No slut shaming.
It's not shaming. I am celebrating. I'm celebrating. All right, let's do it again. Let's go around the room. Second date. Percentage of Americans who report typically having sex.
Sorry, Hannah, just one thing.
Yeah.
So who was closest?
You were.
Yes! Okay.
All right. Percentage of Americans who report typically having sex by the second date. So inclusive. So first and second date. Percentage of Americans. So it's presumably more than four, right? Because that would be mathematically coherent. Oopsie. What do you think, Berto?
Now I'm going to go 20%. Because he like, now the guys are like sweating it. Like, yeah. Second date, definitely. We'll close that deal. And then women are like, yeah, I guess sometimes second date. So 20%.
Like, what the fuck are you gendering this sex thing? So no, I
meaning that you don't like stereotypes of men are interested in sex and
right.
women are not interested in
Let's
sex.
Let's not yes, because women are definitely interested in sex, and I would actually argue that based on what we've heard earlier today, that the reasons why women may not opt for sex on the first date is because of this understanding that we will be shamed for it. So in my ideal world, I would say this answer would be like 75%, and probably in actuality it'll be 20.
But in your ideal world, there might be a lot more babies and STDs, right?
No.
Well, I would tend to disagree because the people don't use the contraceptives, and when they do, they don't use them right, and a lot of times they feel the bareback's better and blah, blah, blah.
Sometimes I don't follow what you say. It's just, it's kind of...
A lot of sex before pregnancy, like... A lot.
Well, yeah, no, I get pregnant really fast, actually. But, yeah.
I argue in the first, second dates, that's like the passion moment where you're like, oh, fuck it, I don't have a condom, let's just do it. Oh, I'll just pull out. Oh, I didn't pull out. Well, I'll get lucky.
You're just fucking irresponsible.
But that's most people.
No.
Lots of people.
So these conversations are very important. This is an opportunity to talk about the importance of contraception. Word. I said that 80% should be having sex by the second date. But in actuality, it's probably 20.
Because I'm saying, like, look, if an ideal
should be, could be. I just shitted myself.
If you want to have sex on the second date, then absolutely go for it. But if you want to wait until you're married, absolutely wait, go for it.
There are no.
I'm going to say 30. Say 30.
Percentage of Americans that report having sex by their second date.
So first and second date.
Probably 20%.
I don't know. I haven't been watching much TV, but I remember watching a lot of Trojan Man, and I haven't seen any of that lately, which leads me to say it's going to be a lot more like what Bertel said.
15.
25.
16.
11%. Who was closest to that? 11%.
Woo!
All right.
Said about how women, because of society and culture, may not have sex on the second date because they don't want to be deemed like slutty or whatever. On the other end of that, men might be like, well, I want to be a gentleman and I don't want to come off as, you know, just wanting to get into her pants, even though maybe that might be the case, which is totally fine. I just wanted to add that as
yes, there are two sides to the coin every time. Yeah.
No, that's right. But see, on the other extreme, people are like, it's abstinence only, people. Abstinence only is the way. And that's a idealistic, religious, unrealistic way to look at the situation, because when you tell teenagers, the thing you got to do is easy, just don't have sex. Well, what happens? Southern states have higher rates of teenage pregnancy. So I'm saying, instead of being idealistic, we could be honest and say, look, if more people were having first and second date sex, you're probably going to have more pregnancies and STDs because people are stupid.
All right, Berto. By the sixth date inclusive, so first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth date, what percentage of Americans report typically having sex in the first six dates? What do you think, Berto?
First base on first date, second base, second date.
What do you consider second base? I'm curious.
Like anal?
Okay.
No. Sorry. I mean licking the ass, not having sex with it. Like, that's ridiculous. Analingus? Analingus, yeah. No. But seriously, by the sixth date, it is 50%. 50%.
Okay, go around the room.
I'm totally wrong. God, by the sixth date. Well, I've outed myself as a total slut, so I please, like, 100% be having sex by the sixth date. But maybe I'll go with my first answer, like 40%?
I know it's wrong, but I'm just going to throw it in there 100%.
Nice. That's bold.
70.
Yeah, 65.
So it was what percentage of people have analingus on their sixth date?
By their sixth date.
Okay. I'm going to...
go 69. Oh!
I'll go with 50%.
50%?
50, yeah.
All right, the people who said 40% are the closest. 35% of Americans report having sex by the sixth date.
Who else said 40? Oh, no, I said 50. I said 50. I said 50, but you said 40. Okay, and it's 35?
Yeah. All right, last one. What percentage of Americans report having sex after marriage? So we're going way beyond the sixth date.
0%. All right, okay. Okay. So percentage of Americans who report having sex after they got married?
Yeah.
Like on their wedding night?
Like they waited. Like they waited until they were married.
Because I was like... Okay. Percentage of Americans that say...
After marriage?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it... That's like... I hope it's...
Y'all are slutty.
All right. Okay, so percentage of Americans that said that they waited till they had marriage sex. Okay. Now, marriage sex is defined how?
Yeah.
That's when you're hanging off the ceiling by one leg. And, okay.
Wait, no, it's Netflix and chill.
Practice. Hanging off the ceiling with one foot on the chandelier. Yeah, it takes practice.
I call that stealing third base. Okay. Percentage of Americans that waited till... That's a low percentage these days. I don't know. I'm going to go 10%. I'm going to go back to 10%. Wait, actually, no. Admit. That's true. And they're religious and they're embarrassed. Depends
but these research studies do not typically involve posting on Facebook kind of, you know, it's usually very anonymous. So it's considered to be.
There's just too much shame. We just shame ourselves all the time and it doesn't.
But I trust the research designers of this study to have tried to account for that is the point. This isn't just like walking up to people on the street. Like, when did you have sex? It's anonymous. That kind of.
All right. 10%.
5%.
20.
15.
That's a lot of Netflix and chill, man. 50%.
50? 50?
2%.
I'm going to say 15%. Wait.
What is the religious breakdown of this sample?
Typical Americans. 60, 70%.
I'm going to say 7.
7%.
17%.
17. Okay.
All right. The teen people are very close. 13%.
Woo! I said 10. That's pretty close.
All right, let's do the round robin again here. I think, you know, in the last three questions here. Percentage of men who have had sex with someone outside of their relationship without approval from their partner. So essentially cheating. You know, when researchers, they don't say, you know, have you cheated before? They ask, have you had sex with someone outside of your relationship without the permission of your partner? What percentage of men, and I'll ask women later, what percentage of men report anonymously to having sex with someone outside of their relationship without approval of their partner? So
0%.
Just
kidding. 30%.
I agree. 30-35%.
It's the bro code. 0%.
60.
I'm going 60 as well.
43.
I want to be optimistic and say like 25.
Totally wrong call. It's totally not optimistic. I would say 55%.
9%.
9%. Okay. So I thought I was being a dick by saying 30%, but
all right. People in your camp were almost. It was 20%.
All right. See, people are pessimistic, man. Okay.
I just want to say everyone's pleasantly surprised. That's 1 in 5 dudes that are cheating on their people. That's not good.
Well, but isn't the divorce statistics like 49% or something?
Yeah, but I'm just saying there's a lot of cheating going on. Okay, so women, what percentage of women report to having sex with someone outside of their relationship without their partner's approval? What do you think, Berto?
So men were 25?
Men were 20.
20. Oh, so 15%, naively probably.
I want to say 5%.
I'm going 25.
Well, more than men.
15.
15.
11.
I'm also going more than and doing 30.
9.
I'm going to go 13.
13. Lucky number 13. Okay.
O'Donnie is right on 13%.
Whoa! Man!
So
some pessimists in the house.
So pretty close numbers, really. So, you know, 1 in 5, 1 in 8-ish. All right. Same. Percentage of single men, 18 to 24, reported not having sex in the past year. So we're talking about young men, young single men, not partnered, not married. Those three categories, single, partnered, or married. So of the single men, 18 to 24, who reported not having sex in the last year percentage-wise. What do you think, Berto?
Percentage of men reported not having sex in the last year.
18 to 24.
Yeah, and 18 to 24.
Single.
Single. Oh, my God. And this does not count spa treatments? No, seriously. It does not count masturbation? Like, it's just sex with other people?
It was, I believe it, they actually stipulated as heterosexual vaginal sex.
Oh, wow. So, first base. Okay. It's going to be a high percentage. Poor bros. I feel bad for my bros, right? But I'm going to go 40% of them are sitting there watching late night TV, doing things.
Yeah, Netflix and chill, except just Netflix. Yeah, let's say 55.
Yeah, I'm going to say 60.
I'd say 30.
Oh, okay. So she's helping. She's helping the bros.
I'm going 25.
30.
I'm going to go with 25 as well.
Yeah, 25.
I think I said 40, so let's see.
Some of you are pretty close with 57%.
Whoa, dude!
So most most young men are reporting that they have not had sex in the past year. Most single men...
Who said 60? You were the closest.
I'm hearing a lot of like anger about this answer. It's because it goes against cultural beliefs that young men are constantly having sex, but that is just apparently not the case. Okay.
Guy wakes up in the morning. He's single. He's like, I feel like getting laid today. Guess what? For the average guy, not easy. Not easy to do. Now, you know, you females wake up in the morning. You're like, I feel like, oh, the guy's on me. Oh, it's another guy. Oh, I have to pick between this 10 guys.
You're getting a lot of protests, Berto. A lot of protests.
No, I am definitely kidding, but I'm not kidding about the fact that it's not that trivial for a guy to just like, oh, I'm feeling horny. I'm going to go have sex with a woman, unless he pays or something.
All right, now women. Single women between the ages of 18 and 24 reporting that they did not have sex in the past year. What do you think, percentage-wise?
Men
are 57. What are women?
Because I'm going to go higher, right? We're going to go higher, but not because they couldn't. 60%. 60%. No, with this, men were 60%. I'm going 70%.
Yeah, 65, 70.
30.
60.
63.
I'm going to say 41.
I have no answer for this. Like,
Let's go low. Let's go low.
3%.
Yeah. 55.
Wow. I'm gonna do a solid and do 9%.
Oh, you threw her under the low bus. Okay.
All right, May's the closest, 51%. 51.
That's lower than guys, though.
Lower than guys.
So they're having a little more fun.
It's easier for women to get laid than guys.
Didn't I just say it?
Yes, but it's not. A woman can't get up and go, I'm going to get laid, and then go get laid unless they actually go to a bar and hit.
Yeah. No, you're right. You have to walk to the bar. That's true. That's a good point.
All right, last series of questions here. Okay, among people aged 18 to 49, so 18 to 49, what percentage reported they did not have sex in the past year among single people? So I'm going to break this out among single, partnered, but not married, and married people. So 18 to 49, what percentage reported they did not have sex in the past year among single people, Berto?
And this is both male and female.
Both male and female, which is pretty close, actually. Pretty similar number.
Within a year, did not have sex. That includes a lot of married people, so no sex there. And so I'm going to say...
Yeah, he's comparing
to
married
single,
people.
Single.
Just single people.
No, I thought I got confused. Okay, so just single people.
I'm going to ask you about single, okay, partnered, okay. And
okay.
Married.
Okay, I'm going to say 15%.
35.
Single, not sex in the past year. I'm going to go 40%.
30.
35.
I'm going to say 17.
35. I'm so depressed. I'm going to say 10.
60%.
What?
60 is closest, 55%.
No way! What are they doing?
55% of people aged 18 to 49 report that they did not have sex
in a year.
Single people.
In a year?
Single people in the past year. Yeah. There's a lot of Americans... not having sex.
How are they defining sex?
All right, partnered but not married. Partnered but not
partnered
married.
Partnered but not married.
18 to 49.
Oh, man.
Reported not
Come
having
on.
Sex in the past year.
Let's go low, right? Everyone, right? Okay. 19. Jesus. I'm going to go with my 15% from the other question.
20%.
25.
They have partners.
Yeah, boyfriend, girlfriend.
60? 60?
Who aren't?
20.
23.
20.
9.
Thank you. 9.
Okay. All right. The 20 people are closest, 18%.
Oh, wow. I said 15. That's close.
That is surprising. So if boyfriend, girlfriends, or boyfriend, boyfriends, girlfriend, girlfriends are 1 in 5.
1 in 5.
Have not had sex in the last year.
Oh, my God.
They're with someone. Oh, they're waiting until they get married, or I don't know.
In a year.
They could be living apart, but the whole
year. A lot of military?
The whole year?
A lot of military.
Yeah, I mean, long-distance relationships, you usually see each other at least once a year. You know what I mean? World of Warcraft relationships. Yeah. All right, married people. Okay, among married people, 18 to 49.
Oh.
What percentage reported they did not have sex? So we have single people, 55%, partnered, not married, 18%. What percentage of married people have said that they haven't had sex in the last year?
Clarification question. Before or after kids?
All married people. Most of them have kids.
Okay.
Most of them have kids.
I'm going to say haven't had sex in the past. 75.
Come on. Married people.
Yeah.
So 0 or 100. That's the only option.
Oh, 0 or 100. Let's do 65.
65. No, come on. I can't. No. This. I'm not having it. I'm going to go.
I have 2 and I still managed to get around to it.
Well, you're a slut, so.
Okay. I'm going to go 10%. 1 in 10 couples have any number of circumstances, but not freaking 1 in 10. 10%.
40.
Oh, my God.
20?
30. And 9%.
35.
37.
72.
Oh, no.
All right. The 9 was the closest. 6%.
Yay!
I saw one!
Yay!
And I married people with kids!
All right. Does anyone want to close with a story about this past quarter? You know, because this is our end of the quarter party. Does anyone have any stories they want to share?
Can I talk about a post that a friend of mine put on Facebook that some of us who are mixed race might actually appreciate? Mm. I'm Indian and an Anglo-Saxon.
A lot of half Asians in the room. Let's just put it.
My friend, who I'm not going to name, he says this is a random memory. He was at a doctor's office, and the medical assistant said, birth date, me, 7/17, so blah, 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 blah. Medical assistant said, ethnicity, me, I'm Japanese. MA laughs and nods. MA says, ethnicity, me, I'm Japanese. What? MA looks at him and says, are you all Japanese? He says, no, I'm half. The MA says, okay, I need percentages. He says, I'm 50% Japanese. And then the MA says, what's the other half? He says, don't ask. We'll be here all day. # mixed race problems.
Oh, my God. That's rude.
Yeah.
Whoa. Think if you say, like, I'm white. You go in. What's your ethnicity? I'm white. And you're like, you don't look white, dude. Right? Like, it's like those kind of questions are so, like, personal. And then the fact that they would distrust, like, are you sure you're Japanese? Like, that's crazy. That's rude.
I just listened to your guys' mixed race podcast earlier this week. As somebody who's half Indian and half, you know, Anglo-Saxon, Irish, Scottish, probably some German, we were on the winning side of the Battle of Hastings. I usually tell people I'm Indian.
It's Native American.
It is not dot, not feather. Don't ever say dot, not feather to me, but I'm dot, not feather.
No, so here's a weird one. I'm supposed to be white. Have you seen this? Like when Hispanics, like they ask their ethnicity in forms, it's like white is the option for Hispanics. And then you can say that your culture is Hispanic. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I've never considered myself 100% white. I consider myself like 40% white, like personally. Not because like of any other reason that, but half my family at the very least is Native American from the South. And some portions are there. There's a little bit of coastal region stuff, which is some part black. And then there's definitely whites from Europe. And there, it's a mix at best. So that, like, I always find that one offensive. Not, I don't have anything against white people, except half of you.
Yeah. I got a related question. I obsessed on the Netflix show Narcos. You haven't watched it yet, have you?
I'm watching Pablo Escobar, El Patrón del Mal, which is the Colombian series that ran 3 years ago.
Has anyone seen the Narcos show on Netflix? No? It's amazing. It's like 10 episodes. It's like Goodfellas in Colombia. It's amazing. Really good. It's really good. And there's like more seasons to come. So I
got to say
But Berto,
something.
Tell us, because as I'm watching this, I'm like, Berto lived in Colombia during this time. Berto was there. Holy crap. Because there's just tons of killing and dying and politicians dying and police officers being murdered. And Escobar was like $1 million for every police officer someone kills. And
not a million, but it was
some high amount.
It's $5,000 for a regular cop and 10 to 15 for elites.
Yeah, and people, random people were just killing cops.
Keep in mind, $5,000 in Colombia at the time
in the 80s.
Was a ridiculous amount of money for kids on the street.
Right.
So here's the problem. So I'm watching the Colombian version, which came out before. It's 77 episodes or something like this. Each episode is like 50 minutes long. So I'm powering it through. I'm in episode like 58 or something. It's both been healing and re-traumatizing at the same time, because I was in Colombia through the 80s. And most of this stuff takes place through the 80s. It starts in the late 70s and it goes to 92. There were events think about mid 85, I would have been 10 years old, right? So it's between me being a little kid and starting to become a young teenager. And so a lot of the events, I would hear something on the news. I would hear the adults talking, aggrieved about something. Then as I start getting older, all of a sudden the events start reaching the borders of my household, because not to mention the economic strife that we endured and stuff like that, but actually the violence, I've talked about in the podcast before, there was an assassination that happened right outside on my street, and they were chasing this car with the motorcycle with the two people in the motorcycle with the guy with the Uzi in the back, which was very common. The bullets went through our windows downstairs, and we were luckily not downstairs because someone would have probably died. It was through the living room. My school had to be evacuated because there was a bomb threat, because one of the daughters was the daughter of one of the generals that was threatened with his life. We had family members, and not my immediate family, but that were kidnapped. Some were killed. One of the guerrilla leaders was the dad of one of my relatives.
So how do you feel about a bunch of American like spectators like myself, like watching it entertainment-wise?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I've never experienced this before. I kind of now feel what it's like when some examples like, dude, I saw Schindler's List. Oh, my God. It blew me away. I was in tears. And then like the Jewish survivors like, yeah, I know, man. I know. Like, calm down, right? Or, dude, I saw Straight Outta Compton or whatever. Boys in the Hood. That's a great movie. I can't believe. And then the black person who's living through it is like, yeah, I get it. Calm down. I kind of feel that way, because when I was watching it, there were some episodes I was literally in tears. I don't mean a little tear was rolling down. I was sobbing, because the thing that happened in the show, I then remembered happening. And even though it didn't happen to me directly, it was like the tragedy of it all. Like, what people don't get is these places like in Serbia and all these places where like are in war, we've never experienced something that traumatic, even through the 60s, which were, by the way, watching Mad Men, I realized just how traumatic the 60s were for this country, with assassination of the president and Martin Luther King and all these things, near nuclear war. But the population hasn't been eradicated. There haven't been massacres on the streets, bombs going off everywhere, except the worst violence has been in the poorest neighborhoods, and that's where the riots happen, and those people can talk about it. Anyways, long story short, watching that series has been really hard, and really, it's like this love-hate thing for me. Like, I've loved it. I've cried a lot. I've healed. I've like looked at it through an adult's eyes, because as a young teenager, I'd be like, oh, they blew up a plane today. Oh, that sounds really bad. And then as an adult, I'm like, they freaking blew up a plane full of people to kill one dude, like, who wasn't on the plane. Like, it just like blows your mind. These people brought the country literally to its knees, and the presidents were being murdered. The presidential candidates were being murdered left and right. The FBI building, the equivalent of the FBI building, was decimated to the ground. By the way, my aunt, I found this out recently. I either didn't know or forgot. My aunt worked at that building that was bombed to smithereens. And that day, her son, her like little boy, was like 2 at the time or something, was sick. And she stayed home from work. The side of the building she worked on is the side that collapsed the most. She probably would be dead. I didn't realize this. And my mom was telling me that. I'm like, so these things touch so many people's lives. And it was so traumatic.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that, as I watch it, that I try to imagine, like, what would it be like if the United States experienced this today? And the only analogy I can come up with is Osama bin Laden lives in our country and is American and has an entire army of people, like a huge army that is actually stronger than our own army and our own police force, and is routinely killing people left and right. And we know where he is. He's like in Colorado or, you know, Delaware. He's like, the government knows where he is, but we can't do anything about it because he has so much power. I mean, imagine someone in your own country having an army that is, you know, purely, and by the way, completely funded by the United States cocaine trade. That's where all of his money came from, was because all the Americans were buying cocaine.
Right.
I mean, just imagine a terrorist who wants to kill people in your own country and to like destroy your government living in your own country. It's terrifying.
That's absolutely right. And I had an experience in 2000, I think it was, right around when like DJ culture was all the rage and a lot of my friends were starting to get into the DJ culture, and there was a lot of drugging happening. Like people were taking lots of cocaine and doing E and doing a whole bunch of things. There was a little brief moment where I tried to get political about it with them. And I remember going out on a limb and saying, like, you guys don't get it. Like, this is what's enslaving and oppressing my country. And I remember, like, everyone was like, dude, calm the fuck down. Like, this is no connection. We buy from a dude that's never seen Colombia. And they didn't get it. And then I eventually backed down because I guess I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have this all wrong. And I hadn't processed it enough as an adult. But looking back on it, I'm like, man, I wish I would have stood my ground and be like, no, you guys don't get it. But also there was not as much material to be able to show or read. That this was like, internet was still like coming up, right? So, but I remember that clearly. And it was like a big deal. I tried to stand up to something. And by the way, I'm not against drugs. I think they should be legal. I think they should be legal and regulated. I'm against supporting things that then support massacres. You know, that's...
Yeah. So I'm glad we talked about it, because I was really curious as I was watching it and like binge watching. I was like, what does Umberto think about this show? So I'm really glad to hear your perspective. Well, that does it for another episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us out there. And thanks for joining us at the podcast party, everybody.
Woo!
And we'll have these podcast parties every quarter, hopefully. And so until then, we are Kirk and Umberto. I've never signed off like this. Please take care of yourself, because you deserve it.
Bye.
Bye.